We're on 1,000 planets and spreading out.
Open the pod bay doors, Hal.
Danger, Will Robinson. Danger.
Look, up in the sky. It's a bird.
It's a plane.
To the Batmobile.
May the force be with you.
Who is that masked man?
Avengers, assemble.
Good afternoon, and welcome to the Fantastic Forum. I'm Ulysses E. Campbell. As always, we'll begin the show with some genre-related news. Sunday's SpaceX launch on behalf of Axiom Space has put the 600th human into orbit. It was the second mission organized by the Houston-based Space Services Company, and it also saw the milestones of the first Saudi woman to fly into space, first Arab woman to orbit Earth, and the first Arabs and Saudis to launch together on the same mission. Rayana Barnawi lifted off aboard a Falcon 9 rocket with fellow Saudi Space Commission astronaut Ali Al-Qarni, privately funded astronaut John Schaffner of Tennessee, and former NASA astronaut Peggy Whitston. The four docked with the International Space Station on Monday. Actress Ming-Na Wen is to be honored with a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame. Wen's career has stretched over three decades, and she is best known to genre audiences for her work on such projects as Street Fighter, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., and the animated Mulan. The recognition will make her one of fewer than two dozen people of Asian descent with a star on the Walk of Fame out of more than 2,750 stars. The ceremony will be held on May 30th. Marvel announced this week that it is collaborating with Hasbro for publication of ROM, the original year's omnibus, reprinting all 75 issues of the ROM the Space Knight comic book series. Based on the ROM action figure, the original comic series was published from 1979 to 1986. It featured ROM and his fellow space knights battling an evil alien race known as the Dire Wraiths. A facsimile edition of the first issue of ROM will be released this September. Volume 1 of the Omnibus is due out in January 2024 and will include the first 29 issues of the series, along with ROM's appearance in Power Man Iron Fist number 73. A new trailer dropped this week for The Flash, starring Ezra Miller. You can view the trailer on one of the FF social media pages. And while you're there, if you haven't already, follow us on Instagram and Twitter and like us on Facebook. We like to be followed and we love to be liked. The Flash opens in theaters June 16th. The CW television series The Flash concluded its ninth and final season this week. The end of the show also heralds a new direction for the CW network, which is operating under new management after the Nexstar Station Group acquired a controlling stake from Warner Brothers and CBS. Nexstar plans to present more unscripted programs and international acquisitions, including shows already produced for the Canadian market. The Flash had been the last remaining show from the so-called Arrowverse. There are still two Warner Brothers produced superhero shows on the CW, Superman and Lois and Gotham Knights, although the fate of those programs is as yet undetermined. Although they certainly don't readily fit with Nexstar's current profile and strategy for the CW. Some anniversaries this week, as May 25th marked 46 years since the U.S. premiere of George Lucas's science fiction fantasy epic Star Wars. Since the designation of May 4th as Star Wars Day, May 25th is now recognized as the Orthodox Star Wars Day. The 25th was also 40 years since the opening of the final movie in the first Star Wars trilogy, Return of the Jedi. Ridley Scott's Alien opened in the U.S. 44 years ago on May 25th, 1979. And Bram Stoker's novel Dracula was published 126 years ago on May 26th, 1897. Image Comics has announced they will be moving to Lunar distribution for their direct market sales. Image previously had an exclusive agreement with Diamond Comics distributors for direct market sales. This is a loss for Diamond, as Image was the largest comic book publisher that still had an exclusive agreement with them, with a number of other major publishers having previously left the company for either Lunar or Penguin Random House. Diamond will continue to act as a wholesaler for Image Comics and graphic novels to the direct market. The move will be effective starting in September. We're saddened to learn of the passing of Ray Stevenson. The Irish actor is best known to genre audiences for his work in Punisher Warzone and the MCU Thor movie series. Stevenson will also appear in the upcoming Star Wars streaming series Ahsoka on Disney Plus. He was 58. Disney's live-action version of The Little Mermaid earned $38 million on its opening day, including Thursday preview screenings. The film is projected to take in between $120 and $130 million during this long Memorial Day weekend, its first in release. Here is the FF Review.
This is Alyssa Campbell for Fantastic Forum.
In the heyday of my Disney princess phase, Ariel and Belle were tied for my favorite princesses. Belle liked books, and Ariel was a mermaid. Those factors alone put them leagues ahead of other princesses, even Aurora, who was the only one that had a famous ballet. In terms of live-action princesses, the 1997 Cinderella with Brandy was at the top. Tiana entered the picture in 2009, but I still held a soft spot for Ariel and Belle. That was, until I was exposed to the internet. And on the internet, the hot takes tell you that Beauty and the Beast is an excellent portrayal of Stockholm Syndrome, and that Ariel gave up her unique qualities for a man. I was 15 and had no media literacy, as well as being deep into my not-like-other-girls phase, and I ate it up. Now, 8 years later, I look at those criticisms with a large amount of disdain. I got over my not-like-other-girls phase and landed squarely in my yeah-I-like-princesses-who-cares era, and the animated Little Mermaid became my comfort movie. I would tell anybody who would listen about how Ariel just wanted to go on land and expand her worldview, how Ariel wanted to learn and explore and was chafing against her strict father, and that she was also 16, and that Eric was really just icing on the cake, and you get the picture. When the live-action Little Mermaid was announced, I panicked. How is Disney going to appease all those who agreed with terrible hot takes online? And then casting was announced. And I cared. I cared a lot. Halle Bailey as Ariel was one of the best parts of the movie for me. I still worried about the live-actionness of the movie and its impact on the bright, colorful underwater world. But all that took a backseat to one singular thought. I have to see this movie. The movie opens on a scene of Prince Eric's sailors trying and failing to harpoon a mermaid, which Prince Eric reveals is actually a manatee. This opening scene was the worst scene for me, as I felt it opened the movie with an incredibly dark tone that did not carry over to the rest of the movie, thankfully. The sailors reference a coral moon and classify Triton's daughters as sirens, which I thought was an interesting choice. Unfortunately, the siren aspect of Triton's daughters is not explored, save for their voice, which explains how Ariel was able to save Eric after he drowned and why he's so obsessed with her. I thought this was a misstep because they didn't explore any of these darker themes within the movie. It felt like they were hinting at something darker, but ultimately left it alone as this is a children's movie. I was glad that they didn't, but I wish that they cut these completely since they only served to explain insignificant questions left during the animated movie. The updates made to songs went mostly unnoticeable for me because each new set was stunning. There is one new song, Scuttlebutt, which entertained me, but was very much evidence of Lin-Manuel Miranda's work on the movie. They did take out songs Daughters of Triton, which I did not miss, and Les Poissons, which I did. Ultimately, though, the songs that remained retained their iconic nature. The CGI for characters in The Little Mermaid was a little lacking for me. The emphasis on realistic CGI made the animal characters lose a little bit of their personality, because they couldn't be as expressive as they once were. The CGI for the sets, on the other hand, blew me away. We get our most impressive use of CGI in the Under the Sea performance, which was also created with the help of the Alvin Ailey Dance Company. Every bit of underwater scenery conveyed its meaning perfectly. The ship graveyard was menacing, the reefs were beautiful. Colleen Atwood, the costume designer, deserves rays. When the camera panned over to Ariel's sisters, I teared up. They were gorgeous. The land costumes left a bit more to be desired, but they were practical. They just didn't blow me away like the mermaid designs did. We do not get a Princess Diana look-alike wedding dress, which I mourn, but the mermaid designs make up for all of that. Jacob Tremblay as Flounder did a fine job at making up for the loss of animated expression, and David Diggs gave a solid performance as the Jamaican crab Sebastian. Awkwafina also did her best as Scuttle, but I'm not a fan of Awkwafina and the qualities she brings to her characters. For the actual face characters, I was blown away by the depth now added to the human characters, like Grimsby and Queen Selina. I enjoyed the changes to the script to give a bit more emotional weight to these characters, and I thought that Art Malik in particular did an excellent job embodying these additions to his character. Queen Selina could not be compared, as she was entirely new, but I enjoyed her similarities to King Triton in the way they parent their children. It was a welcome addition, and Noma Duzweni did an excellent job. I was very taken with Jonah Howard King's performance. I felt that Melissa McCarthy did her very best Pat Carroll impression, which was nice, but I didn't think she added anything new to the role. Javier Bardem added a menacing aura to King Triton that I enjoyed. And of course, Ariel. Halle Bailey gave a wonderful performance. Her singing was on point, her expressions were wonderful. Halle Bailey took not being able to speak and did an excellent job through her facial expressions, which served to capture Ariel's curiosity in a perfect way. Ariel's character is not changed between movies, and she still strives to learn and grow. Overall, I loved the movie. The missteps were small, and I barely noticed the over 2-hour runtime. This might be a hard experience for any young children, but I enjoyed the added depth to the movie. I cried really hard at the end. 10 out of 10. No notes. Alyssa Campbell for Fantastic Forum.
And there you have it, the official FF review of Disney's The Little Mermaid, which opened in theaters yesterday. And yes, that was my daughter, Alyssa Campbell, who did the review for that particular movie. And she was so hyped, there was no way that I was going to be able to write that, basically. So, anyway, today we're talking about some of this week's news items and more. Joining me are Drew Bittner, Julian Lytle, and Black Gorbachev, Philip Jean-Pierre. Hey. Everybody, welcome to the show.
Hello, everyone.
How's it going?
Well, going okay. Much better now that that we are through this. So, by the way, I had wanted to ask, what did you all thought about this Little Mermaid movie? I mean, yeah, I'm assuming everybody has seen it. And actually, I read your review, so oh. So I should be asking everybody else.
Oh, well, I guess it's not for me. the old movie's fine.
I have not seen it.
Really?
Sorry.
Yeah. I am kind of in the same boat. Mm-hmm. Like, I was happy with the original. I mean, basically, it's basically the same movie. Nothing mm-hmm. really changed. So, I mean, other than people, that's about the only real difference.
Yeah, well, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt. I was just going to say, but yeah, because the difference with a movie like The Lion King, where you have these creatures that are supposed to be
CGI animals.
Yeah. Yes, you know, basically. Mm-hmm. And you know, which was tougher because they don't emote the same way that these cartoon characters do. So,
Uncanny Valley and all.
Yeah. But I think they'll do better. I mean, you know, I hey, I haven't seen Aladdin or Mulan, but I think in terms of adaptations of the animated stuff for Disney, I think Little Mermaid, they're going to knock it out of the park with that. I expect this to be a big movie.
Most of them make a lot of money. So.
Yeah.
We'll see if it can make Aladdin money.
Aladdin did? Well, I'm sure Aladdin, yeah, because it had Will Smith as the genie. So.
It was a billion. Yeah, I mean, really? it's not going to make Lion King. That made 1.6 billion.
Wow. Really? That is so sad because of it was just, it wasn't as good as the animated thing. But again, it's, we can do a live action thing and make $1 billion?
Technically, the Lion King isn't live action because there's no animals in it. It's all animation. So they just made a new cartoon.
Yeah.
But it's considered live action because it looks realistic.
It looks like it's real, sort of, almost, kind of.
Keep in mind, all these remakes got one thing going for them, nostalgia.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, that's pretty much the reason. That's like, we're going to make it, everyone's not going to say, ooh, I remember when I loved it back in the day, it's a cartoon.
Exactly. It's like, we can sell it on streaming. Yay.
Nostalgia and people's disregard for animation.
Other than Black Adam tanking, do we really need a live action Moana? No.
No.
It made a lot of money.
No.
It did.
Live action Moana has come out already?
No, it's in production.
Oh, okay. Because that's what I was thinking. I'm like, how did I miss that? Because the other ones I saw, I just didn't see, you know?
Uh-huh. No, but Johnson is really keyed up to play Maui. Again, live action.
Yeah. Well, I think, Philip kind of got the last word on that in terms of nostalgia. I mean, because that's what it's all about. And that ultimately is what drives the turnstiles at these things. So before we, I had really, after the events of this week with Image Comics making the move away from Diamond, I decided that we needed to talk about that. But before we do, I'd just like to get a little bit of response from you all about Ming-Na Wen getting a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame. How do we feel about that?
I love her. We met her at Baltimore Comic Con a few years ago. She's wonderful. She's the nicest person in the world.
Oh, indeed. And in fact, legendary, because the way she treated your daughter was so wonderful.
Oh, could not have been nicer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so, I mean, but the fact is, she's been a Disney princess. She's been in Star Wars. She's been in Marvel. She's kind of run the table on the Disney world. And he did a great run in ER. And, I mean, the woman's deserving.
Yeah, and apparently, As the World Turns, also.
Yeah.
So, it's, go figure. I'm sorry, Black Gorbachev, you had something to say about that.
I honestly thought she already had one. Because I remember the biggest thing was when she hit the Triple Crown for Disney. For some reason, I think I thought before then, it's like, she's probably going to get a Hollywood Walk of Fame. I'm surprised she hadn't already had one before. So, I mean, I have always been a fan of her. I mean, even though I wasn't a huge fan of the show, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., she made it for me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and Boba Fett, she was the reason I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
It's what she does. Like,
I had forgotten about Boba Fett.
You were clutch.
That's how she got the Star Wars angle.
Everybody else wanted to as well. honestly, every time you need her to come in clutch, she will.
She will.
Almost everything she does is almost perfect.
Yeah.
So it's very rare for me not to enjoy anything she's done. So I'm happy that she's getting her Hollywood Walk of Fame. It's like you can't think of anyone more deserving.
Yeah. The interesting thing to me, and I did not learn this until I was looking at some of the news stories connected with her actually getting the recognition. But the fact that there are so few performers of Asian descent who have stars. I mean, we're talking about over 2,700 stars, and you've got fewer than two dozen Asian performers that have them. I mean, that's like, wow.
That's a tiny number.
Wow. Yep. Yes. In comparison, it absolutely is. So, but I agree with you. I think that she is extremely deserving, and I can't wait until the 30th so I can see the pictures and put those up, and it's just a heck of a thing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. Okay, so the big news of the week. And, Julian, you had mentioned that there's a lot that's going on in comics. I am sort of curious. Oh, before we get to that, though, you're listening to Fantastic Forum on WERA 96.7 FM and streaming via WERA.FM. We are your community radio station. I am Ulysses E. Campbell. I'm joined today by Black Gorbachev, Philip Jean-Pierre, Drew Bittner, and Julian Lytle. And I was just asking Julian, I want to ask you what else is going on, because I know you're a lot more knowledgeable than I am. So if you want to mention what's going on and then we pivot back, or you just want to start talking about this big move of Image being the last, the largest publisher that had still been with the former monopoly people, Diamond Comics Distributors. And this doesn't leave a lot on the table for Diamond, but, anything you want, man. Oh. We can go straight there, or you can, just mention, this other stuff is going on in addition to this.
I guess the other things that are happening is, like, Tom Woodruff has officially somehow declined his nominations for Eisner, his Eisner nominations after all the hubbub over his teaching methods and character, I guess.
I did hear about that.
It's been a long week for that. I don't know how much that really matters since Eisner voting has already begun. You know, as a voting member, I voted yesterday, so I'm not big on y'all getting rid of the votes and we have to do them all over again.
Yeah.
Distillery, the new company started by the co-founder of Comixology and the guy who used to, I think, run the originals when it was part of Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
They had just announced their first book, which is basically an anthology of all the creators that has partnered with that company. What else? There's something every day, so it's kind of hard. You know, it's always somebody blowing up, being mad at somebody. But I think those are two of the biggest things outside of Image leaving Diamond. Basically, all the big publishers that used to be in the front of the previews are now gone to other methods of distribution.
Mm.
Basically, leaving at once, you know, all of the comics distribution coming through Diamond, losing the three main companies that company 80% of. 80% of the single issue comics that ship to comic book stores at one time. It's like, that's kind of crazy. Like, I don't know how you continue to have business.
Yeah, tell me about it. You know, I mean, but I'm sorry. Black Gorbachev, what were you saying?
No, I was just cracking me up. Like, they basically talk about the big five. Like, was it Marvel, DC, Image, IDW, and I forget who the other one is. I'm sorry. Basically, Marvel left in 2021, and now Image is gone, which is honestly, that was their last bastion of, like, I guess, mega companies that are failed. So it's interesting that they left. I'd be curious about why, what brought this decision on, but I thought it was cool. I thought it was interesting to see it happen. I'm actually surprised it did happen. But I remember when they started in 1995, back in the day. Was it 93.
Mm. 93,
thank you.
Oh, you mean, Image.
Image.
Yeah, technically 93, with the first actual comic coming out through, Malibu? Through that?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like, with the last month of maybe of... Not 92, maybe, or something. I remember it was announced in 92.
Yeah,
maybe Ash Can made it. Maybe it came out, and then
Youngblood. Then
and then everything was late forever. But yeah,
Youngblood spawned Wildcats.
Man, when those books came out, that was a massive shot in there for a lot of people.
Yeah.
So it was. I mean, it was a wild time watching everything develop, and then all of a sudden we all. And I will freely admit, backstage, we all had a really, really, so I'm going to say, clarified look of how the comic book industry worked. Hmm. And we were just like, oh. I mean, it was some good, some bad, but you're just going, oh.
Well, yeah. it's a heck of, I mean, it's a cutthroat business. Uh-huh. is certainly what you can say about this. And, you know, it has always been, though. And, you know, but recent, and when I say recent, I mean within like the past 40 years, developments that allow for creators to earn royalties, I think, were overdue and sorely needed. And as I recall, that was kind of what Image was founded on. You know, these guys, you know, McFarlane and Eric Larson. You know, yeah. I mean, and it's like
balancing now.
Yeah, you know, but we want to keep more of the money in our pockets.
Well, they own the characters.
Yeah, you know, yeah. I mean, you know, and I mean, yes. Black Orbit.
The thing that got me, though, is around that time, the concept of creator-owned was redefined, and it was no longer hard to kind of make your own book, because if you were in the trenches back in the day, the idea of printing your own book and distributing yourself was a massive endeavor. It's like, there were nights you spend at Kinko's, you have an overextended, like, stapling machine to staple all this stuff together, and then around that 92, 93, probably 95, I'll say the computer came up and it was actually being more used, and all of a sudden people learned how to build their own comics, and the idea of needing a company as an overhead or an umbrella for you kind of started to fall away. I mean, think about it. Before you had before it was like you had to print an ash can. It was like a small little digest size book, and then now it's like people were printing and like designing their like whole comic books that included everything from soup to nuts design. Mm-hmm. To drawing, which actually was the fun part of where comics basically became fun again, where it was less siloed and less like an exclusive club to actually become a creator, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, Julian.
Yeah.
Is this going to create more opportunities for some of the smaller publishers? Or is it going to be something that hurts Diamond more? I mean, you know, because Diamond has been, so Penguin Random House has Marvel.
And,
Somebody else, too.
Dark Horse.
Yes, exactly. Thank you.
Which is also might be in trouble because Embracer Group had not a good quarter. They're mostly known for owning a lot of video game companies, but they also own Dark Horse. Every time one of these big companies that hold a bunch of IP start getting shaky with their money, start worrying about the smallest thing, because they ain't cutting the things that make them $100 million from video games. Uh-huh. Them comics can get hurt. Hmm. But yeah, I think it's Dark Horse. I don't know actually what's going on with IDW because of their issues from a couple weeks ago with the firing of 40%, getting a new CEO, changing their editorial board. With the people who are still there, but they might. I know they're not with Lunar. So DC's with Lunar. Now is Images with Lunar. And I think Oni is also with Lunar.
Yeah. IDW is with Penguin Random House.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. So, yeah. So, in terms of the. Yeah. Lunar, DC, and now, of course, Image, and Penguin Random House, Marvel, IDW, and Dark Horse.
Yeah.
That's a problem right there for Diamond.
It hurts Diamond a lot in the short term, and maybe in the medium term too. They don't have a deep bench left to make up the difference, and so that's going to hurt. But maybe they start looking at other smaller publishers and go more boutique. Maybe they offer more services.
That's my concern. You know? If they start to lose, they have lost their major. Does that affect their actual distribution network? Because that gets expensive. So are there going to be some markets that don't get the books on time or at all?
They already have that issue.
Yeah.
They just had a car accident recently where they didn't get the books on time.
They're going to start having problems. And it's going to be a big challenge for their leadership team to see how they get through this.
Hmm. Yeah, you know, and that's one of the things that has fascinated me about this whole change, because, and quite frankly, it, to me, it also exposes some issues with the media that covers stories like this. There was a site that I took a look at to get some information on this, and I gotta say, I felt particularly at the end as if the coverage was kind of slanted, you know, as if this site, and I'm not going to mention any names, but as if this site was saying, yeah, screw you, Diamond. You know, it's like, I mean, and it, because basically they were saying, yeah, the reason this change is being made is because Lunar is so much better at customer service and service to, I mean, there was a, now, I'm not saying it wasn't accurate, but the way they presented it.
Well, I mean, one company has a history.
Like, one of the biggest complaints was they literally had, they had a chokehold on the industry for,
and a monopoly.
Yeah, well, and you can do whatever you want if you got the monopoly. Exactly. But yeah, but hold that thought for just a moment, because that musical cue means it's time for us to take a short break. Because Fantastic Forum comes to you via WERA 96.7 FM in Arlington, Virginia. We're a community radio station, and among the things that means is that this is some place where you can become involved. You can actually find a real home here if you're interested. You can potentially have your own FM radio show. You can learn about audio production and video production. We have some beautiful facilities. We've got wonderful equipment that you might be able to get access to. And it all starts with you finding out about community media. Visit the website at WERA.FM or that of our parent organization, Arlington Independent Media, at arlingtonmedia.org. Find out about us and how you can get involved and what we can do for each other. So, in the meantime, Julian and Drew and Black Gorbachev and I have a lot more to say about this particular issue. We're going to pause momentarily, but we'll be back right after this with more Fantastic Forum. Don't go away. And welcome back to the Fantastic Forum here on WERA 96.7 FM and streaming via WERA.FM. We are Arlington. I'm Ulysses E. Campbell. I'm joined today by Black Gorbachev, Philip Jean-Pierre, Drew Bittner, and Julian Lytle. And when we took the break, we were talking about some of the big news to come out of the comics industry earlier this week. Simply that one of the largest comics publishers, Image Comics, is making the move away from Diamond Comics Distributors. Of course, Diamond had been a semi-benevolent monopoly, I will describe them as. They controlled distribution for all the major companies for a number of years, up until the pandemic. And that was when, due to the pandemic, and here is Diamond having a cessation, temporary cessation of publishing and distribution, sorry, and DC Comics wanted to continue to get their books out there, and so they started, in fact, Julian, why don't you tell us what happened with that, because I can't remember now the name of the company.
Oh, okay. So, at that time, DC decided that for their business, it was no longer good to only be handled by one distributor. So, at that time, they went through new distribution companies created by two very large retailers. One being Midtown Comics, and the other being Discount Comic Book Service, who's the aforementioned Lunar. after a certain number of months, Midtown decided to drop out of that distribution business, even though now they actually handle a DC subscription business, if you want to subscribe to their comics the old-fashioned way and have things mailed to your house like it used to be. They have a whole website.
You sound very knowledgeable about that.
Because I subscribe to four titles. Because, hey, there was nothing wrong with that. I don't know why we got rid of that. Not everybody has access to a comic store.
There you go.
There's also some, at the time, there was some tumult within the retailer community. Because not only was Diamond decided to basically shut down the entire comic business in the United States. That now one of their biggest competitors, being that DCBS was one of the top three retailers in the country because they are a mail order business, now control distribution of one of the major two comic book companies. There's still retailers who have issues with that, but over time that has waned because, again, of customer service, good packing, and on-time shipping. That being said, their new release comic book day is Tuesday, but most of the retailers just like, we like Wednesday, so every book is still going to be put up on the shelves for Wednesday. Mm-hmm. I'm not a big fan of that because I have annoyances with comic book stores, and they're just like, we want to do things the old way all the time. Music used to come out on Tuesdays. Then guess what music said? We coming out on Fridays because that's the weekend. And guess what? Everybody got in line. But in that comic book store, you can't change the day. People just can't come in other days. But that's my editorial at the end. But that's basically what happened. You know, DC decided this is not good for business, especially when you're owned by another corporation. And like, what you mean they just shut down that whole business? Who says they can shut down business? And then once everything got back up to speed,
DC didn't come back.
Marvel, of course, it was done. Yeah. Marvel then decided like we're going with Penguin Random House,
because
again, these companies are owned by bigger companies, and they're like, what do you mean this company decided? Walmart didn't shut down the distribution of our DVDs. And our toys and our sheets.
Mm-hmm.
Amazon still shipped everything. What you mean this one company could... What? What?
So, in other words, Diamond did something, essentially took this action that...
Caused their own downfall? Yes.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say, reminded everybody that they were beholden to this one company.
Yes.
You know, and it ended up being not so good. But, you know, when you've been on top of the heap for as long as you have, and it was a very interesting story because I have to confess, Steve Jeppy is a friend of mine and really nice guy. And he kind of, when he told me how he ended, because he didn't intend to be the 800-pound gorilla in the room. It's just kind of the way that circumstance developed.
That's a really nice way, Ulysses, of saying that Marvel screwed up the distribution business in the 90s.
They really did.
Yes, yes. But and it left, you know, it left Steve holding the bag, so to speak.
Left a vacuum.
And, and it was a vacuum that he immediately, very happily, leaped in to fill. And the rest is history. But where I'm going with all of this is that when you have, and you heard me describe Diamond as a semi-benevolent monopoly before. I mean, you know, because, hey, they could basically do anything they want. There was nobody to stop them. There was nobody to challenge them. You know, and in fact, I mean, yeah, so... It's not unusual that any sort of action that you want to take, you don't consider all the ramifications of it because we can do what we want. Mm-hmm. We're Diamond Comics distributors, you know? It's like, hey. And so, I mean, so I absolutely understand. And hey, they're still doing business with a number of these companies. In fact, I think even DC, I want to say that Diamond is still doing their wholesale, and no, they're, no? Okay.
Diamond, if they want to ship DC books, order them wholesale from Lunar Comic Distributors.
Oh.
Just like they have to order wholesale from Penguin Random House for Marvel books.
So the trades and all of that?
Well, the book deals are different.
Yes.
Book deals, or book distribution in which... DC is handled, I think, by one of those huge book publishers. Because Marvel is Penguin Random House.
Yes.
It's one of the, I think it's one of the other ones. What was the one that was trying to get bought by CBS? I forgot.
I know what you're talking about.
It's one of the other big publishers, but yeah.
Yeah, we're going to find out about that.
Yeah, but Image will still have their book distribution done by Diamond. So they still do a lot of different collected edition and trade sales for these companies, for many of these companies. It's just that, yeah, they got to focus more on pushing and promoting the smaller publishers that are still there that can't just easily go to these other larger companies. So they have to do some marketing. They have to really work for it.
Yeah.
And really work with these publishers.
So the funny thing is about, like, the thing I enjoy the most is the pandemic opened up a lot of crap. Well, I should say, like, expanded a lot of cracks in a lot of industries, especially comics. When Diamond was like, yeah, we can't do anything because of the pandemic, the level of, we'll say, ingenuity and, shall we say, workarounds for people to actually get their comics was actually pretty impressive. Like, don't get me wrong, like, stuff like Kickstarter was going, went really crazy, blew up, because not only did it bypass the need for publishers, but it also bypassed the need for distribution, because you could just do it straight to the customer itself. And then at that point, people were just like, they were like, I'm just going to stay on Kickstarter. And when it came to, and you know, Diamond pretty much, no disrespect to them, they kind of took for granted the fact that they were the only ones in town. And then slowly people were just like, I can do this. And they did the customer research, found out what people didn't like, decided not to do that. And that's kind of where we are right now.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, to Julian's point, they need to come up with a different business model, not just distribution or marketing, but literally a different business model to make sure that the small publishers don't go the same route of deciding, I'm going to go someplace else. Legacy is no longer a reason to stay with Diamond.
Was it ever? Was it ever? Was it Simon & Schuster you were trying to come up with? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think it's Simon & Schuster. I could be wrong, but I think it's them.
I actually think you're right. So anyway, though, but it's it's a heck of a thing. I mean, and the business side of what goes on in comics, like I said, it's cutthroat, you know. Yeah. But I guess the fact that, I don't know, I want to say it's feast or famine, because there are plenty of people. I mean, there are plenty of people who earn their livings in some form or fashion behind some element of what comics are. And, you know, the whole, everything from the creation of them to the printing to the distribution, I mean, all of that. I mean, and then you got the whole back end thing now behind comics as intellectual property. Mm. And, you know, the whole synthesis of, yes, transmuting this intellectual property into these television shows and movies and all of that. Well, that's that is a very descriptive way to talk about it. But despite all of this, there are still people who can't earn a living behind making comics.
True.
You know, I mean, they have to do something else in addition to it, or there has to be another income coming into their household or something. And, you know, I mean, and this is a huge business.
Yeah.
It's a huge, I mean, which is, again, we were talking about creating opportunities in this business. If you happen to see a shortcoming or, you know, some way to do something better than somebody else, you know, but, you know, there's also, okay, you know, I mean, can you pay your bills? And, you know, that's where the rubber meets the road with all of this stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
it's...
You sound like you have something to say. Drew sounded like you had something to say.
Well, I mean, I've worked in that business, and I know what people were getting paid back in the day, and it's not a lot, depending on what book you work on, and every book is handled as its own thing, and the health of a company isn't necessarily reflected in paying more to people that are working on the lower run books. So, you know, it gets really difficult, and it's kind of merciless. And also there's this aging out thing. You get an awful lot of editors that come in and they want to work with young, hip writers and artists, and a lot of people stop getting work from the companies. And you know, there's no retirement plan in comics. You know, you work as long as you can. I mean, like, for instance, Peter David had an epic run on Hulk. He's been a longtime comic book writer. He's been in the hospital for the better part of a year now because, mm-hmm. you know, he's had strokes, he's had setbacks medically, and Marvel is not helping him out. They're not really doing a lot to, you know, cover him. But, you know,
they sure going to promote those movies. Like, they came up with a whole cloth from their minds.
Well, I mean, the credits do not often reflect who actually did the work on those books. You get the little thank you at the end if people sit through 12 minutes of credits at the end of the movie and see in 6-point type, you know, a thank you that scrolls across the screen for 2.5 seconds, you know, but that's nothing. And I mean, I'm on the side of guys like Ed Brubaker, who said, you know, I came up with the idea of Winter Soldier. Nobody had done that. Marvel had not done that. That did not exist.
But it was derivative. I mean,
No. Bucky Barnes is derivative. The story is not derivative.
Agreed. Winter Soldier
the
is not
derivative.
The
title is not derivative.
That's true. But the problem, and look, don't get me wrong. I mean, because it may sound like I'm playing devil's advocate here. I'm really not. But the problem is this wonderful story, and it was a wonderful story. I mean, I'm like, oh my God, you know, because Bucky Barnes is one of those characters. He was really dead, and then he wasn't, and it was like, oh, this is great. But the reason the story works is because, oh, this is what happened to Bucky Barnes.
You know? I get you, but in anything else, right, if it's a movie, and you remake a movie, or you mm-hmm. make a sequel to a movie 20, 30 years later, mm-hmm. That person, the original person going to get a check.
Yeah.
The new person, and they make a sequel from that movie.
Yes.
That person who made the new sequel still won't get a check.
Oh, and Brubaker deserves to get paid. There's no question about it.
And it's in the opening credits, too, based on the story by, based on the Boston characters by. It's right there in the opening credits, not buried at the end.
That's also because they have this thing called a
contract.
Union.
Yeah,
a union.
Yeah, but I don't want to go down the rabbit hole of work for hire. No, work for hire. I mean, because we've talked a lot on previous episodes of the show about how underhanded this stuff is, you know? Oh, in fact, you're listening to Fantastic Forum on WERA 96.7 FM and streaming via WERA.FM. Radio Arlington. I'm Ulysses E. Campbell. I'm joined today by Drew Bittner, Julian Lytle, and Black Gorbachev, Philip Jean-Pierre. We've been talking about a lot of stuff, but it all sprang out of Image Comics, one of the largest comic book publishers behind DC and Marvel, who left the distributor, Diamond Comics Distributors, that had been distributing everything for a while there. And now they've got none of the major, well, I don't want to say none of the major, well, but
no,
you can.
No,
none
they
of
have
the major
none of the, 80% of the business is gone. And I, mm-hmm. I guess, like, going back to the money, is what we have to actually have to think about is the retailers, because actually that changes their profit margins and also their workflow in terms of ordering comics, because now many of these people, not only have they, some people who've been in comic book store for decades and decades actually mm-hmm. just got used to just using Diamond and one distributor mm-hmm. and having your entire system built upon that. And then there's people who came into the business during that period of one distributor, so that's mm-hmm. the only one they know.
Yeah.
There are probably older distributors that do remember having to order from multiple distributors, even though it was pen and paper back then.
Mm-hmm.
But they might be able to, you know, easier navigate that depending on, you know, their attitudes and mood about it. But also the type of the discounts you get per how much you order is different now. Some of those discounts happen to be on your total order of comics, not just like Marvel or DC. It's like, oh, this is your discount is based on all your Marvel books, all your DC books, all your Image books. This is the breaks we'll give you on shipping X, Y, and Z. That's out of the window. That completely changes, like, your entire financials, how you run your business.
Yeah.
That's probably going to be really major, and that we probably going to start seeing effects of that within the next. It doesn't happen for the fall, but I bet you that first 4 months is going to be rough. because things had to shake out after DC left. Mm-hmm. Also, there was a major thing in a lot of ways, going to what Philip was talking about earlier. Diamond had a great or a huge impact on what comics would make it into distribution.
Yeah, oh,
they
absolutely.
Chose.
Yes.
They picked. They were the gatekeeper. Picked.
Yes.
You know? Mm-hmm. So they're not going to tell Marvel they can't do it because Marvel was their highest seller, you know, so Marvel Comics. But everybody else, you know, if you're not with one of the publishers and you want to try to get in the comic book store, yo, they could just like, nah, we don't like that. So we ain't gonna carry that book. Or you need to do X, Y, and Z. Or we like, you know, help ship us some books, but then they ain't gonna never offer it or put it in a place to help you market it so stores can order it. So
Or is buried in the back of previews, the ordering book.
That's what I mean. Yeah.
Yeah.
Previews is huge. I mean, not every retailer is gonna go, I'm gonna go through all, but like, how big is it? Like 300 pages?
Something
up to,
like that.
Well, it's not as big as it used to be.
Page 285.
Yeah. That's the thing. It's like, how do you, like, it wasn't really curated. It was just like, okay, these guys are the most famous. I'm going to go through top five and that's it.
Yeah.
And that's what they focused on.
Batman and Wolverine.
Yeah. Well, okay.
Who has separate books and they have separate inserts anyway.
Yeah. Okay. So we're almost out of time, but a couple of things that I had wanted to throw in here. So, and this kind of goes under the heading of, you see that there could be a problem, why do you not attempt some kind of damage control? Because in terms of the statements that have come out, everybody is saying wonderful things about, oh, we appreciate Steve Jeppe and Chuck Parker and everybody at Diamond and all this kind of thing. Steve Jeppe is like, oh, you know, we appreciate Image and, you know, everybody's saying all the right things. But I understand at Emerald City Comic Con, because all these companies are doing marketing and they're, you know, So Lunar had a breakfast, and apparently top Image execs, including Eric Stevenson, Matt Parkinson, the direct mail sales director, Alex Cox, were seen at the Lunar breakfast. No secret, they'd been meeting with Christina Merkler's team, yeah, you know? And so it's like, wait a minute, you know? And then, okay, and this is what cracks me up here. So the, I'm not going to say what outlet this was, but this reads like some blurb out of Lunar's press releases. Like, Lunar Distribution was first launched in 2020 when it became the home distributor to DC and provides distribution services to the direct market with an emphasis on quality, efficiency, and customer satisfaction. And then they actually take the extra step of saying, retailers interested in learning more about how to set up an account with Lunar can visit, and they got a freaking URL in here.
I mean,
and I'm like, yikes.
There you go.
That's what they're supposed to do. I mean,
honestly. Well, yeah, but if it's Lunar, this is a news outlet that's covering this story.
Yeah.
That's telling you, if you're somebody else that wants to leave Diamond, here's where you go.
Yeah.
Was that for retailers to order, or that for other comic companies?
Were they running a press release?
Yeah.
It looks like it was taken from a press release. Yeah. But this was an outlet that covers comics news.
Yeah, every outlet the same.
That's true.
Yeah,
that's true.
And I'm very careful which outlets I read to give my clicks.
I am too. And I tell you what, I'm going to be a lot more careful about that now than I was even several days ago.
Hey, I've been a DCBS customer for almost like 16, 17 years. Keep it 1,000. I got a box waiting for me in my building from them right now. They pack immaculately. They were the first. It was the first box I ever got with the little form shaped bubble wrap.
Oh wow!
You know what I'm saying?
Oh yeah.
Form shaped. You know what I'm saying? Your joint ain't moving.
Nice.
Come out looking crispy. Looking right. Mint.
Yeah. Wait. Black Corbett Show's trying to get a word in. Right.
So here's the thing about the press releases. I mean, in the end, at a certain point, let's face it, Lunar's out here whining and dining everybody trying to be Mr. Steal Your Girlfriend or Steal Your Partner. 100%. I'm sitting there going, yeah, they're going to go to that because they probably got a really nice invite with a gift basket and a bunch of other stuff. I'm saying, no pressure, but please feel free to come to our dinner and we can have some conversations. They probably did the same thing, the publishers, and the same thing to press outlets. Sure. And it's like, here's our thing. And I understand there's definitely going to be a slant, but it's like, you know, I mean, on the one hand, it does kind of take away from the journalistic integrity. On the other hand, yeah, there's always been a slant towards like that way with a lot of publishers.
And pancakes.
Sorry, yes.
And
well, if it's a breakfast.
A lot of these outlets, and I'm going to tell you right now, Marvel has this thing that I enjoy the most where, like, if they have a series, they used to be like, I think I remember specifically it was Cloak and Dagger. Cloak and Dagger, whatever your opinion of it, whatever it was, they flew people out, wined and dined them, had them give a preview and a bunch of other stuff, and the reviews were amazing. And I'm just like, are we sure about that, or is it just a great gift basket?
You've been taking bribes.
Hey, nah, it's just called marketing. Nah, they just catch the vapors. Just because you give me something to eat in the hotel stay don't mean I won't give you a fresh.
I mean, you got. I mean,
well,
I'll keep it a thou wow.
That's why I ain't inviting you.
They invite me anyway, because my vote matters.
No, I said I wouldn't invite you if I was doing the marketing and promotions. Like, yeah, that guy Lytle. Nah, he can't
He's
be
too
bought.
Honest.
He nah. can't be bought. Yeah.
Nah, man.
Yeah, we want somebody who can be bought. Anyway.
It shows appreciation.
Yeah. Hey, but look.
Most of them, some of them, a small number of them, tend to be Instagram influencers. You're sitting there going, you talk about how they flew you out and you gave an honest journalistic opinion. Come on now.
Black Gorbachev, I hate to cut you off, but we're out of time for this episode. I'd like to thank my panelists and you too for tuning in. Of course, Fantastic Forum is also television show. You can check it out if you visit the website, or if you tune to Montgomery Community Media. We're actually still playing on MCM. You can also download us as a podcast. Find us on all the platforms where you find and download your favorite podcasts. And the show re-airs in each and every Sunday here on WERA from 4 to 5 p.m. Make sure you come back. And of course, we are in first run every Saturday afternoon from 4 to 5 p.m. right here on WERA 96.7 FM. So, this Memorial Day, take a moment to remember those who made the ultimate sacrifice. Hope that your barbecue is filling and fruitful. Enjoy the holiday weekend. Hope you get to enjoy it. And come back again next week. Same bat time, same bat station. Stay safe, everybody.